This is the Transcend Human Podcast, a show dedicated to the spirituality and psychology of the human condition. This year, however, we're taking a detour together as I venture into the world of writing. Each episode documents my journey from the big idea to a complete fiction novel. Join me through the highs and the lows that are sure to be part of this creative process. Yes, friends, welcome back to the Transcend Human Podcast. Great to be with you. It is October 23, 2024. It has been a while. I think it's been over a month. This may in fact be the longest stretch that I've been on between episodes, but we knew this was going to happen. This was part of the plan, if you will, because ultimately this is a whole different deal, right? And I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in a minute here. But like I said, welcome back. Let's just run through some things that have happened or things that have changed since the last time we met. So I think I was complaining about the heat. That was probably high on my priority list the last couple episodes, because we were definitely experiencing heat like we've never experienced here before. So it was like in the 90s, close to 100, sometimes over 100. Just for days on end, if not weeks. So for the most part, that's gone. We've been experiencing some nice mid-70s, low-80s, things like that. And it's dipping down into the 50s and 60s at night. So cools off really well for sleeping. It takes a long time for the house to heat up in the day. So things have been great. It feels amazing. Like I said, sleep is 10 times better when it's cool out. No air conditioning required. No heat required. Windows open 24/7 almost. We do shut things up as it gets into the 2, 3, 4 o'clock hour. When it gets to the hottest point of the day, you still have to play that heat game a little bit. But I would say for the most part, pretty amazing. What's not to love, right? Problem is that we also went through a period of time where the heat and the low humidity and the winds caused that trifecta for fires in California. So that was a few weeks ago, if not maybe a month ago now, when we had three really big fires in the area, and we were literally right in the middle of all three fires. So there was the airport fire, maybe 15 to 20 miles to the south of us. Then there was the bridge fire and the line fire to the north of us. And that little triangle, we just sat and watched as these crazy fires just spread and spread and spread, consuming thousands of acres, right? And impacting many homes in those areas. So not fun to watch on the nightly news, right? You know that the firefighters are doing everything they can do. But when you have three major fires going on all at the same time, the resources obviously get spread thin, and they just don't have the money and the people and the hardware that they need to contain all of them at the same time. So obviously, you know, this is for many of us, it's a global warming thing, a climate change thing that we see as just continuing to worsen. I know there's people who don't believe that, but to each his own. In the western part of the United States, we definitely see the effects of that trend. And not just in California, don't get me wrong. In fact, while these three fires were going on, both Oregon and Idaho looked like they were completely covered in multiple large fires. So it, on some level, it's our cross to bear here in the West. But we're not the only ones feeling the change, obviously. In other parts of the country, the heat's increasing, the storms are becoming more violent, more tornadoes, more flooding, all of these things. In fact, the other thing that happened, I think in between the last episode and this one, multiple hurricanes, or maybe one of them happened before, Hurricane Helene. And then I think it was Hurricane Milton, maybe? I don't know. But two major hurricanes, which just drenched the East Coast, So for those people living in North Carolina, our thoughts and prayers are with you. The devastation there looks ridiculous. I mean, the pictures look like you're looking at a third world country. It's so bad. And then the next one just came right along behind it and did additional damage to northern Florida. So things are crazy when it comes to the world, natural disasters, things like that. But hopefully we'll get through it and we'll get back to a season where things are just not quite as crazy one after the other, right? I mean, I think, you know, based on my belief in Christianity and some of the eschatological beliefs that I have, I do see the world continuing to get worse on some level. But hopefully it won't just be a sharp downward trend. Hopefully we can get things stabilized a little bit so that the world isn't reeling from all of these natural disasters. Enough of that. My little soap stand there for a minute. The last thing I wanted to talk about, and I kind of hinted at this at the beginning, is just my lack of production or my lack of productivity. But it's, like I said, it is what it is. I knew this was going to happen when I switched gears and decided I would try writing a novel. It's a huge difference between what I'm doing now and what I used to do back in the first 3-4 years of the podcast. So back then, what I would do is I would spend the week writing the podcast episode. And then toward the end of the week, I would record it and get it up and running so that it was available Monday morning. And at that point, I think I was knocking out weekly podcast episodes. The difference now is that I still have to write for the podcast, but I'm also writing the novel, which, in case you didn't know, is a little time consuming. And I'm not putting nearly as much time toward it as I want to, you know, just because of the work that I do, the life that I'm living, you know, family, friends, all of those things, everything gets in the way of that additional hobby that you want to add to your plate. But yeah, that's the weekly routine now, is trying to find time to write the novel. And then at the same time, trying to figure out, what am I going to talk about on the podcast, and what do I need to write and research and document so that when I jump on the microphone, I know what I'm going to talk about. So that's where I'm at. Like I said, this may be the longest stretch in between episodes, but hopefully you are finding them helpful. Hopefully there's something that will encourage people who have a big idea or a work in progress, and they're kind of in a similar situation as I am. Hopefully this is encouraging to you that we're on this journey together, and let's just keep moving forward. That said, let's jump in. This week's topic is Live Writing Masterclass and the StoryGrid Blueprint. Chapter 1, Attending the Masterclass. Chapter 2, Listening for the Thing Not Said. And Chapter 3, Planning My Next Steps. Chapter 1, Attending the Masterclass. So those of you who've been around for a while know that I am a big fan of the StoryGrid. Don't fully understand it. Don't really want to fully understand it, but I am amazed at the story structure elements and the way that they describe it and the way that they lay out a structure for a novel. It just, most of it just makes sense to me. And so I've been in that world for quite a while, listening to podcast episodes, reading books, and just trying to figure out which parts of it I can use as I go on my journey. So at some point, I saw an email that said, hey, we're doing a free live masterclass to talk about the StoryGrid Blueprint. That happened on September 20th. So, wow, that was over a month ago. So September 20th, I attended this live masterclass with hundreds of other people. For those of you who are Zoom users, you know that, you know, you can tell how many people there are there by how many pages of viewers it says. And I think there was at least 11, 12, 13 pages worth of attendees. So it was pretty crazy. A lot of people. Obviously, it wasn't a live class where you were asking questions through your microphone. You know, it was, the chat was running, you could ask questions in chat, and if they got around to it, they got around to it. So I attended it, was super stoked to be able to do that with it being free. And so I thought I would just walk through kind of what was talked about and who was the presenter, and then kind of use that to kick off the episode. So the guy who was there was Tim Grawl. Tim Grawl is the CEO of the StoryGrid. He's the guy, he's written 6 books. The one he just wrote is called The Shithead. Apologies for the language. And it comes out in, it's probably out now. Came out in mid-September, it looks like. He was struggling with writing. His story is kind of, you know, that he was struggling with writing. He found the StoryGrid, which really changed everything for him. The things that he had tried that didn't work were reading a lot and writing a lot, learning more theory and tips, learning from professional writers, joining writing groups, and writing entire novels. So he basically explained that, you know, all of those things that he tried didn't move the needle for him. He didn't get any better at writing from doing any of those things, which is basically what all of us do, right? We all read a lot. We all try writing. We all try to watch YouTube clips and listen to podcasts about tips and tricks for writers. But according to him, all of this stuff just caused more chaos. He said even more embarrassing for him was that he taught himself some stuff through StoryGrid, which didn't really work for him either at the beginning. And then when he became part of StoryGrid, he's a little embarrassed to admit that they basically did the exact same thing for people looking for that content, right? And it was just like, oh, how many podcast episodes and clips can we put out with tips and tricks to help people become better writers? But at the end of the day, what they found is that it did not make writers any better, even after all of those things. So one thing that was changing the writer's quality, if they took a writer that they had kind of had an interaction with for a long period of time, what they realized is the one thing that was changing that writer to become a better writer was direct feedback, right? And according to Tim, this is what's lacking in the marketplace right now. Feedback, not from peers, but from an actual editor. Getting feedback from something that is tried and true, from a rubric of sorts, so that you get immediate feedback on what is working and what isn't. He believes that writing is difficult because we often do it in solitude. It's always very hard to self-evaluate your writing. And feedback is typically unspecified and subjective. So if you ask a peer's advice or your family's advice or even another professional writer's advice, you're going to get all sorts of feedback that's all over the map. But it isn't going to be super helpful because it's just subjective, right? It's not pushing you toward a tried and true rubric that will make your work better. So Tim explained that there's a proven 8-part process that they walk through in a master scene writing class. So part of this free webinar was to promote the master class, right? Which it costs money, it's expensive. And I knew that going in, right? It's not like it was a bait and switch. It's one of those things where, they're trying to offer some free content and get people excited about StoryGrid. And at the same time, it's like, hey, you know, this is what we do for a living, obviously. So we'd love to have you join one of these cohorts as they begin. So the reason that he is so passionate about this master scene writing class is that it's been so successful that writers are literally getting better based on the following concepts: practice versus performance. So separating learning of the skills from performing of the skills. deliberate practice, literally breaking things down into individual skills like world building, dialogue, objects of desire, the five commandments of storytelling, show versus tell, things like that, and actually practicing each of those individual skills in solitude, right? In and of itself, just practicing writing, focusing on that for a while, and then getting feedback. Feedback with measurement and coaching, all of those little pieces that will help move the needle for you. So he walked through the eight parts of the process, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I'll just kind of throw them out to you. It's a 6-week course. So, you know, step one is keep it short. Do this in 6 weeks, get you as much information and as much feedback as we can on your writing so that you can then jump right in with those new skills and keep working on your project. Step two is live classes. So there are actual classes that you attend where you listen in and you share with other people, other students in the class, you analyze masterworks together, things like that. Number three is a weekly writing homework. So starting with like an 800 word exercise, you write. Then there's daily writing exercises, which are short writing exercises based on specific skills. Step five is the story grid rubric. So 65% of published books lose money due to the editor selecting things that they like versus things that actually work. So Sean Coyne, who actually wrote the book called Story Grid, after being an editor for years and years and years, what he realized is that if you take all of those skills that you obtain being an editor, there is a way to condense all of those skills into a methodology. So he developed the Story Grid methodology to be used as a guide between himself as the editor and writers who were coming to him. It's basically a language, right? It's a language that an editor and a writer can use to have conversations about their story, about the story structure, about each scene, what pieces are in the scenes, what pieces are missing from scenes, all of that. So like I said, that became a book, and now he basically uses that methodology to teach coaches, to teach new editors, and then that trickles down to new students or people who are wanting to write using the Story Grid method. Step six, trained Story Grid coaches. Step seven, community and weekly scene analysis. So in these 6 weeks, you're basically studying masterworks, you're analyzing them objectively, and you're learning how to analyze your own work in progress in the same way. And then finally, expert feedback. So I mentioned trained Story Grid coaches, right? They're part of this training course, and they're giving expert feedback that leads to specific measurements of your writing, coaching for ongoing writing, and then direct feedback on the writings that you do. So that's it. That's the 8-step process. If you're interested, you can go to storygrid.com/6-week or /workshop. I think either one will get you to a page where you can sign up for a course like that. So as he was finishing up, he kind of talked about, you know, what's the most important things, what's the most important stuff. And some of this was just off the cuff, right? He's answering questions, and he's basically just riffing on ideas. So one of the things that he felt was a very important thing to talk about was minimum viable exposition, which is this whole concept that when you're writing a scene, you need just enough information so that the reader has what they need to know what happens next. He says to err on the side of less is more. And he says people often write too much, telling the reader things that they don't even need to know, or things that they've already intuited somehow earlier in the book for themselves. We call this info dumping. And it's really just the idea of adding more information than is necessary. The next big thing you talked about was that everything starts and ends with theme. Now, if you don't know what you're trying to tell the reader, you'll end up all over the place. So his recommendation was to find your theme. And these themes, he says, often come out of your own life, right? A low point in your life or a dark time or some big event or some really negative or positive thing that happens in your life. And he says to do a deep dive on that incident and brainstorm that and basically try to figure out what impact it had on you and then what kind of a story you want to tell about it. Next, he talked about scene writing and that scene writing is possibly the most important thing that you can learn to be able to consistently churn out scenes that work, scenes that fulfill the reader's desire to keep reading, and really kind of provoke what comes next. So it keeps that, I believe it's called narrative drive, right? It keeps people wanting to read the next chapter because it's so exciting. And then lastly, he talked about the writing and growth process in terms of importance. So this is a piece that I'll talk more about it in a minute, but this is a piece that really got me. So he was kind of using himself as an example, and he said, the first thing that I would do is take a master class like the one that he was promoting, right? And learn the basic writing skills, things like how to show versus tell, things like that. And once you have some of those skills, specific skills down to where you're pretty confident that you can write a scene using those skills, then start with a scene and write a scene that works. Then after that, write a sequence. So a sequence is 2, 3, 4, 5 scenes that work well together and have a common kind of goal. Next, he says, write a novella. So I don't know what a novella can be defined as. Like, I don't know if there's a set number of chapters or words or pages in a book. I don't know. But a novella, which to me is just a short novel, is the next step before then writing a full novel. And then after you've written a full novel, he said, maybe then write a novel with multiple protagonists. Only then does he recommend writing things like trilogies, series, anthologies, etc. And that was it. He was done presenting. Chapter 2, Listening for the Thing Not Said. So like I said, he presented all of that information and then he took questions. He had originally planned, I think, 30 minutes for questions, but when I left, it was already 1 hour, a full hour into questions, and I'm sure they went even longer after that. I absolutely love that he was willing to do that for the people there. You can just tell that he loves what he does and he loves the craft of writing. Now, it was a free class. So like I said, on the one hand, it was meant to help the attendees to gain something about the writing process. But at the same time, like I said, it was an advertisement. So it is what it is. There were some people commenting that they felt like it was a bait and switch. And I'm like, oh my word, people, just calm down, right? It's so frustrating to me, just considering that it was literally in the description of the class that that's what it was about. But I was just so grateful to be on the Zoom call, getting to hear from Tim directly in real life. It was amazing. And I felt bad for Tim, though I'm sure he has thick skin, right? He can handle it. But I just wanted to boot those people off the call so that the people who really cared could concentrate and enjoy the content. That said, I did get a lot out of it, but I wanted to bring up the silent part, the part that he didn't necessarily say out loud, something that I picked up on and now I'm having to struggle with a little bit. So the long and short of it came directly after the list that I read, right, about learning writing skills, write a scene, write a sequence, write a novella, write a novel. Then, only then, maybe, write a novel with multiple protagonists, or a trilogy, or an anthology, or a series. Oh, see where I'm going with this? It shouldn't be news to anyone. After all, this is something I've struggled with since day one. My problem statement is this. Should someone who has never written a book before try to write a trilogy right out of the gate? But to answer that question, I have to back up a little bit. When I got my big idea, there were a few things that came along with it. First was this feeling that I had been called to something bigger than myself. I know this gets a little woo-woo, But there's no other way to describe it. I literally felt like I was called to write this book. And if I didn't, I was letting someone or something in the universe down. Second, because of how big the big idea was, to me, in my brain, it had to be a trilogy. There was just too much content. Multiple groups of people, multiple locations around the world, a futuristic world requiring a fair amount of world building. After all that, you know, I've got spaceships in this book capable of reaching deep space. So obviously, this is a different time period, and it's a world where you have to build some ideas that people don't understand. And last but not least, I felt like I was made for this. What does that mean, you ask? Well, it just means that when I look back on my life, I can see exactly where the big idea came from and why it's up to me to write it. Starting with the way I was raised, the worldviews I grew up with, the parenting I had, dealing with my parents separating for a time, the education I received, a religious focus on the end of time, my fascination with science fiction and fantasy, which started with the first novel I ever read. Believe it or not, this didn't happen until my junior year of high school. Before that, I hated reading, and I swore that I would never do it if I didn't have to. Then, the fact that I dabbled with writing my whole life, becoming a therapist and getting my master's in social work, struggling with addiction, and finally, realizing recovery. And the list goes on and on. Without each of those life experiences, I don't think I get this big idea. Somebody else probably does. So this is why I pushed forward with my big idea, because it was the right thing to do, the thing that the universe wanted me to do. But then I would get the random question from someone like, oh, but have you ever written a novel before? Or have you ever written anything before? Even my wife was a little on that side when I first came to her with this question. And then, obviously, Tim Grawl, CEO of StoryGrid, basically called me out and affirmed the same thing. Who do you think you are trying to write a trilogy when you haven't even written a novella? Ugh, I was devastated, dejected. All of those anxieties and self-doubts rose back to the surface, and I just knew I was a failure. Chapter 3, Planning Next Steps. So what did I do? Well, I think I cried for a bit. I can't remember if I actually cried or if it was just an inside cry, whatever you call that. But then I talked to my wife about it. And she was as gracious as anyone could be in the situation. She understood the concept and that it probably was easier to write a single small novel before biting off a full trilogy. And she went down the road of helping me brainstorm other book ideas, both standalone ideas, but also taking a character from the trilogy and just writing a novel about that one person. Things were going well, and I was resigning myself to the fact that this might be the best way forward. Then a few days later, my wife said some things that made me stop in my tracks. First, she said, you know, technically this isn't your first book. You wrote an entire nonfiction manuscript, and you've been writing off and on since high school, and you've been writing blog posts and podcast episodes since the early 2000s. So does it matter that you don't have a published novel or a published book to point to? Maybe all of that writing that you've been doing is your way of preparing for this big idea. Second, she said, if you feel that strongly about the big idea, there's a chance you won't ever be interested in writing anything but this big idea. The whole time you'll be looking in the rearview mirror wondering if you made the right decision. And finally, she said, maybe you should look at the first book in the trilogy as your standalone novel. Technically, it is a book with three acts, and it has to work as a book by itself. So in a way, you're just writing your first novel. Now, it may be a little more complex than others, but at the end of the day, it's still my first book. And if you get it written and it doesn't work, or if you can't get it published, you can always decide at that point to start writing book two. Or you can find a standalone that works and start there. But either way, you've started the trilogy and you're that much closer to finishing it. Whew. Friends, I can't tell you how that made me feel to be supported on that level, to have a person that you love pushing you to live your best life, to believe in yourself, and to chase that dream. So with that little push, I took my standalone book ideas and I placed them on the back shelf for another day. I dusted off the scene I left off on and I got back to work. One small blip on the radar, and luckily a blip that didn't completely derail my big idea. So, update, where am I at on this journey? Well, I just finished up scene 10, or scene 12 if you include the prologue. I'm a few scenes away from completing the beginning hook, which is the first 25% of the book. And things are kind of starting to settle in. I'm still nervous about my writing style. I still struggle with showing versus telling. I'm sure that I info dump at times rather than just using dialogue to explain complex things and allow the writer, or the reader rather, to, you know, envision the details for themselves. But the story is coming along, and I'll have time to tighten things up on all of those things in draft 2 or 3 or 4. So that's where I'm at. Let's land the plane. Like I said, I think that's it for today. I really just wanted to recap the masterclass and talk about my struggles with my big idea, and then keep you up to date on the progress. Thanks for hopping on today and spending some time with me. I really hope you are making progress on your big idea, on your WIP, your work in progress. I would love, the fact that this is a podcast and it's kind of just a one-way street, just me talking and you listening, it kind of sucks because I would love to be in a room with all of you and get to hear your stories and your works in progress and what your struggles are with your projects. I just think it would be so much fun, but that's not the way podcasts work. So, and I know lots of people on podcasts say, hey, leave a comment in the notes, or, you know, leave a comment on the website, or leave a comment on social media. But I don't know. It just, that doesn't work for me for some reason. I'm really not on social media a whole lot anymore. So it's not a place where I have a lot of dialogue with other people. So I don't know. I mean, I could tell you, yeah, leave me an email, send an email, info@transcendhuman.com. You know, tell me about your struggles. Tell me about your big idea and your work in progress. But I don't know. I don't know if you will feel inclined to do that or not. But if you do, I'll read it for sure. I will read it. So that said, have a great week, everyone. Take care of yourself, be nice to those around you, and as always, keep transcending human.